Hi, this is Jill Murphy from Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to Pharmacy Focus. The Pharmacy Times Pharmacy Focus podcast provides the latest industry news and information, thought leader insights, clinical updates, patient counseling tools, and innovative solutions for the everyday practice and business of pharmacy. Before we begin with this week's episode, do you know what drug was the first antibiotic used by doctors? We will reveal the answer at the end of the episode. In this week's episode, we will be discussing the patient journey in specialty pharmacy with Autumn Zuckerman, Director of Specialty Pharmacy at Vanderbilt University Medical Center, and Joanne Stubbings, Professor at the University of Illinois at Chicago College of Pharmacy. Stubbings describes the patient journey in specialty pharmacy as a process that starts when the patient has symptoms or is diagnosed and goes all the way through the treatment and through completion or discontinuation of therapy.
Some patients who are prescribed a specialty medication never get their prescriptions filled or don't take them in the right way because of roadblocks in the specialty patient journey. So that's why it's so important. And there are a lot of differences between specialty pharmacy and non-specialty pharmacy. And the main one is that what people think of first is that the drugs are much more expensive. So there's fewer medications, but they're more expensive on an individual basis. And
Zuckerman added that a difference in the patient journey of specialty patients is that you usually can't go down to your local pharmacy and just pick it up.
Sometimes we think of the differences are in that complexity of helping patients access treatment. I think one other difference is that you can't usually can't go down to your local pharmacy and just pick it up. There's complexities in logistics of how these medications are shipped to the patient. And that's something that we have to talk about from the beginning for them to understand that this will probably be shipped to you, it needs to be refrigerated, and kind of all of those logistics around not just going down to their local store and picking it up. So that's another complexity that's added to the specialty patient journey.
Stubbings went into more detail of what kinds of patients specialty pharmacists are engaging with from a clinical standpoint and the types of illnesses and diseases.
So the first thing is they're usually referred to a specialist. And so they have to go through the process of recognizing that they need some kind of treatment and actually get a referral to a specialist that could possibly be at a different clinic or a different medical center. And then the patients that we see, there's two top conditions that are most commonly seen in specialty pharmacy, and that's all the cancers and also autoimmune disorders such as rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's disease. But also there's a lot of other conditions that require specialty medications such as hepatitis C, multiple sclerosis, pulmonary arterial hypertension. And then this is important for pharmacy. There are other conditions that medications that are very common for community pharmacies to dispense, but these are also can be considered specialty medications such as transplant, HIV, sickle cell disease, and now we're also starting to see specialty medications in migraine and hypercholesterolemia. And so these are all drugs that a community pharmacy, that might not have the specialty pharmacy accreditation, will also participate in the specialty pharmacy space because it's kind of creeping disorders that we don't typically have as specialties, such as migraine.
We are taking a short break to celebrate pharmacy hero Jennifer Christovich Craner at Inspira Medical Center in Mullica Hill, New Jersey. When some of Craner's colleagues had to self-quarantine or couldn't go to work because of childcare issues, Craner took on most of the extra shifts. Craner's colleagues said she is always dedicated and compassionate and always goes above and beyond for both patients and coworkers. If you would like to nominate a pharmacist or pharmacy staff member as a pharmacy hero, email the address in our description with your nominee. And now, a quick word from the fit pharmacist, Adam Martin, on how to develop your personal brand.
Hello, my friends. This is Adam Martin, founder of The Fit Pharmacist, and I am here to share another track on your personal brand playlist. So recently, I was named the most influential pharmacist in the profession of pharmacy, and I took a moment to look back and see what actually helped me to do that. And I've compiled those key things, and I've made a playlist to share them with you and help you make a breakthrough in your personal brand as your coach to help you stand out and script your brand. The foundation of your brand is you, which is why I'm here to help you dispense your full potential with my series of snippets that I've created just for you, your personal brand playlist. And today, we're dipping into trap number 6 on the personal brand playlist, which is charging yourself. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever let your phone get down to 10% battery, 5% battery, 2%? It freaks you out. And what do you instantly do? You go grab your charger. You plug that sucker in because you don't want to run out. Just like you. You work hard. You use your power of your mind, your body to create content, to work, to be of service. But if you don't recharge yourself, you too will burn out. Self-care is a priority, not a luxury, especially when it comes to building your personal brand, because self-care is the foundation of a successful personal brand. And I'm gonna share with you 10 simple ways you can recharge yourself and fuel your personal brand. Number one is to start every day with a gratitude practice. Writing down a few reasons you're grateful can make a huge difference in your mood. There are numerous positive effects on counting your blessings as opposed to your burdens on your mood. And this is backed by research. Number two is get some sun. Vitamin D deficiency is tied to depression, so try to get at least 10 to 20 minutes of exposure a day. Tip three, make time for exercise because exercise releases endorphins, the mood-boosting chemical. One study also showed that long-term physical activity was linked to lasting happiness. Tip four is get more sleep or have a nap. In a study, subjects who slept 4 hours a night showed declining levels of optimism and sociability as a function of days of inadequate sleep. Tip number five is to meditate more. Many studies have shown the positive effects of meditation on brain health and reducing anxiety depression symptoms. One showed meditation to improve sleep quality, leading to an improved mood. The sixth tip is to treat yourself to flowers. There was a study done between two groups of people, one getting flowers and another getting candles. The study showed that the group gifted flowers had a more positive emotional improvement compared to the group gifted candles. Guys, you can send them and get them too. Tip number seven is to smile more often. One study showed that participants who smiled during a stressful activity had lower heart rate levels after the activity than those who did not smile. So in a way, it seems that smiling tricks the brain and body into a calming response. Tip number eight is to eat more fruits and veggies because studies continue to prove and show solid evidence that a diet rich in vegetables and fruit is associated with greater happiness and positive well-being. The ninth tip is to spend quality time with positive people. The happiest participants in a study spent 25% less time alone, 70% more time talking, and twice as many deep conversations. The study demonstrated a happy life is social rather than solitary. So you can join the Fit Pharmacist community on Instagram at TheFitPharmacist for more uplifting content that will boost your mood. And the 10th and final tip is to plan a trip. Obviously, with COVID, there's some restrictions and you want to be smart about it. But a study prior showed that people tend to be happier in anticipation of an experiential purchase rather than material goods. So just start planning when all this is over with on where you're going to go next. Note though, if you're suffering with clinical depression, there is no substitute for professional help. But you are your brand. You have to replug yourself. So hopefully these 10 tips will fuel you to script your brand. If you're looking to dive even deeper and get serious about standing out, creating a career that you desire and deserve, that's exactly what I do. Check out scriptyourbrand.com or follow me on Instagram at TheFitPharmacist for more content like this.
Now back to the show. In terms of considerations of a specialty pharmacy, Stubbings described how the journey has three parts to it and the roadblocks that come with it.
The journey kind of has three parts to it. And the first part is before treatment, like when the patient is diagnosed and when they are in the process of getting the prescription. The second step is during treatment, after they get their first medication, their first prescription, and they are taking it for any period of time. And then the third step is completion, whether they either stop that treatment or switch to another drug. And so I'll just talk about some of the roadblocks before treatment, and then I'll pass it on to Adam before treatment. One of the roadblocks is getting access to the medication. And there's two big factors that may prevent the access. And the first one is prior authorization. And the second one is financial access, because the drug could be, but then they might have a $2,000 copay. And so the main reason why people don't take their medications or don't get their prescription or don't take it appropriately is because the different points in the journey are not fully managed. So this is the role for the specialty pharmacist and the technician.
Zuckerman added onto the parts of the journey and how different transitions can happen to that patient.
They can change providers, they can move geographic locations, their financial status and coverage can change. And a lot of patients are in and out of the hospital or in and out of the emergency department because of their condition. So the specialty pharmacist often serves as the coordinator of care for all of those different transitions. One thing to speak to Joanne's point is the financial aspect of it. So we tell our patients, if you change your insurance or you lose your insurance, we want to be your first call because we need to help make sure we can set you up for additional assistance or try to get the medication approved for you through your new insurance. So that really helps with adherence and persistence to therapy. And then in addition to the financial changes and the sites of care changes, a lot of these medications require monitoring. So we're not just filling the medication every month without checking on the patient. We want to see, are they actually benefiting from treatment? And if they're not, let's take them off of this high-cost therapy or switch to something else that might help. And if they are benefiting from treatment, is it still safe for them?
Dealing with the fears and anxieties of patients is an important role for specialty pharmacists. And Zuckerman feels that specialty pharmacists have a unique opportunity to calm some of these worries about the diagnosis or the drug by trying to normalize their experience as much as possible.
So oftentimes we're their counselor, their cheerleader, and really their confidant throughout the entire course of treatment. And I'll just say during the pandemic, you know, this has been especially true. We've had a lot of patients contact us about fear of continuing their medication. So we've really spent a lot of time on the phone with patients, counseling them and saying, that what we know and what we don't know and recommendations during this time. So that's been an important role during the pandemic.
Did you figure out our fun fact of the week? The drug that was the first antibiotic used by doctors was penicillin. Penicillin was the first antibiotic used by doctors and was discovered by Alexander Fleming in 1928. Fleming discovered penicillin after returning from a two-week vacation to find that mold had developed on an accidentally contaminated Staphylococcus culture plate. The culture of penicillin prevented further growth of Staphylococcus. Thanks for listening to Pharmacy Focus. Stay tuned for next episode where we will be joined by another key opinion leader in the pharmacy space.